HENLPFM Radio, 106.9, Salida, Colorado. And again, this, I'm in another transition stage. I'm usually used to doing this all in two-hour span. So hopefully I can get this taken care of, and we'll play a song and get started with our next guest, which is Richard Gage from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. So here we go.
How can you see into my eyes like open doors, leading you down into my core, where I become so numb with the soul, and the spirit sleeping somewhere home until you find me there, and
listening to KHEN LPFM Radio, and this is Truth Quest with Melody. And we're streamed on the internet at khen.org. And if you would like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest, they're available at www.gimmesometruth.info or linked from the khen.org website. And tonight, my co-host is Katie O'Brien, and we have a special guest returning, Richard Gage. And please welcome him from the San Francisco Bay Area, architect Richard Gage, an AIA member of the American Institute of Architects and founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Good evening, Richard.
Good evening, Melody and Katie. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm glad to have you back because I know that you're doing something that's being very effective. And unfortunately, it's 10 years later, but, you know, it needs to be done. And if you'd like to just go ahead, and we'll just let you fill the audience in on what you've been up to.
Okay. Well, I have been an architect for a long time, and I was on my way to a construction site meeting, and I heard on the radio David Ray Griffin, a researcher, author of 9/11 books, and an extraordinary, thoughtful individual who was providing on the radio all of this evidence for the explosive controlled demolition of these three high-rises. I mean, I was just in shock. I had never heard anything like what was being portrayed before. An alternative theory as to how the Twin Towers came down. I mean, really, I was a Reagan Republican and just not prepared for anything like what I was hearing. So I went to hear him that night, and my God, everything he was saying seemed to be true. It all was internally consistent, and it made it obvious that we had been lied to by NIST, FEMA. NIST is the National Institute for Standards and Technology, tasked with explaining these collapses, if you will. I don't use that term anymore. These buildings were thoroughly destroyed by explosive controlled demolition. So we have all of this evidence that I assembled from PowerPoint presentations, and I took that in a couple of months after putting it together and just wanted to show the other architects in the office. 15 of them came to my presentation, and most of them thought I was just nuts until then. But all 15 agreed with me that these are explosive demolitions and they were just blown away. And this has happened, and they signed my petition as well, all but one. This is what the way it goes. I've now given this presentation 150 times in over 17 countries, and almost everybody who sees this information in this context ends up agreeing with us and signing our petition. It's pretty overwhelming, architects and engineers particularly, because they intuitively know, you know, when they're being given the truth relative to buildings and so forth. Were you going to say something? Oh, no.
No.
I thought I heard something. So this is pretty amazing. Are you still there, Melody?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good. Sometimes my phone gets cut off. We now have 1,000 architects and engineers, well over 1,000, demanding a new investigation of the three World Trade Center high-rise collapses. We're also calling for a federal grand jury investigation of John Gross and Shyam Sunder at NIST, the lead investigators, for their part in what is obviously a cover-up. So when what we did in our February 19th press conference in San Francisco, in which we announced that we now have 1,000 architects, we faxed that petition to all of the members of Congress, giving them the evidence. And we made a big point that this evidence is now really amounts to evidence of treason, And there is a law called misprision of treason, which forbids us from holding on to evidence of treason and not bringing it to the attention of others. So we did indeed bring it in a big way to the attention of the press and Congress on February 19th. And we continue to speak around the country. I'll be going to Canada, Ottawa, Toronto, and Montreal in a week and a half. And after that, up here in the Bay Area, San Rafael and Marin County, with the firefighters for 9/11 Truth. The architects for 9/11 Truth and the firefighters for 9/11 Truth are pulling together our respective trades, professions, credibility, and in an interactive, dynamic format, we'll be presenting all the evidence, which I'm going to highlight for you now, if you're ready.
Let me ask one question before you get into that. I mean, being that they did have an investigation in the past, do you guys have some kind of idea or plan that you can make sure that it doesn't get swept under the rug in the same way that it did in the first one?
No, we don't have much of a plan for that. We're going to need one, I'm sure. What we're doing right now is educating architects, engineers, and others so that we can have enough pressure on public officials and the media to even begin to get a real investigation. You know, we've done the investigation. The evidence is clear. What we need to do is put enough pressure on these bodies to get them to, you know, acknowledge, force them to publicly acknowledge that there's a problem and we need to be looking at it. That's not imminent, that success. So we're in it for the long haul.
You know,
our shirt sleeves are rolled up. I've been working at it 4 years now.
And I don't know if this would mean anything at all, but since the date, the last day or so has been kind of significant with other events, that the people have been wanting to get together and have a get new investigations on. I don't know whether getting together and with some of these other groups to start demanding that these investigations come to fruition, that somebody's held accountable. Because one of the reasons why I asked you to come on is because you're still keeping the fire going of trying to get the truth out. And it seems like with what I've been doing over the past few years with my radio program and that sort, is I just want to see somebody held accountable for these things, and if we don't start doing it, it seems like they just happen over and over again with just a different scenario. And I don't know if you feel the same way or not, but I haven't seen any of these commissions that have ever been put together that ever really brought about the accountability, other than one lone person has always been held accountable, and there's always been question as that person's ever been responsible. And I don't know if you even equate that with 9/11, but I'll let you go ahead and explain, what you're about and why, your facts to bring about this sort of an investigation.
Yes. Well, I'm not sure how to ensure that an investigation is thorough and transparent. Others who have expertise in that area are going to have to help. My job is more of an educator, and I hope that others who are aware of these things, attorneys and so forth, will bring to bear their skills to that end. What we bring to the architects first is the World Trade Center building number 7, Most people, most architects and engineers, in fact, don't even know anything about the third worst structural failure in modern history. It's unconscionable that that this is not taught in all the architecture schools. This is a 47-story skyscraper that collapses into its own footprint at free-fall acceleration for 100 feet of its descent in the afternoon of 9/11. It was a football field in length away from the North Tower, and it mysteriously just begins a sudden descent, exactly like a classic controlled demolition or implosion, like the old hotels in Las Vegas. So this is a dead giveaway. Architects, engineers, others, people understand this. They've seen it on TV. They know what it is. This is why the media won't play this on TV, with extremely few exceptions. I mean, a building can't fall straight down through the path of greatest resistance, the thousands of tons of structural steel in this building, in fact, five times stronger than it needed to be to hold the building up for the life of that building, without those columns being synchronistically removed within a tenth of a second of each other on each given floor, synchronistically timed. That's the only way you can bring a building straight down into its own footprint. Fire can't accomplish that level of precision. And fire was the stated cause of this building's demise, at least by NIST. FEMA basically acknowledged that they had no idea how this building came down. They say further research and investigation is required because their best hypothesis had only a low probability of occurrence. They state this in May of 2002. But by that time, all of the steel had been illegally destroyed. It was shipped to China for recycling. This is the evidence of a crime scene, the illegal destruction of evidence, cited by Fire Engineering Magazine editor-in-chief Bill Manning as a crime in and of itself, with political forces at work who have no value of a thorough scientific investigation.
Do you think that China knew that they were getting the rubbish from the World Trade Center collapse?
Katie, when you talk, back up just a little bit. You're really hot. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I think China clearly knew they were getting the World Trade Center rubbish. In fact, it's a huge amount of steel all of a sudden, and they were certainly aware of World Trade Center, the disaster. So, I don't know what they thought about that. How they dealt with the fact that the ends of these beams, of the two pieces of steel from World Trade Center 7 that were saved, we find intergranular melting, rapid oxidation, sulfidation, and evaporation of the ends of these beams. This is documented in FEMA's Appendix C in their Building Performance Assessment Report. These things don't happen to steel in office fires. The office fires are only 14 to 1600 degrees. They don't melt steel. What melted the steel? Steel doesn't melt until about 2700 degrees, more than twice the temperatures of the hottest office fires. And yet, there it is. And there's pools of molten, it turns out to be iron. The first responders called it steel. They said it was flowing like lava. And there's photographs of it, many eyewitnesses of it. And yet it's denied by NIST. NIST takes over the investigation from FEMA in 2002, and they completely eject from their findings, from their final report, this documentation of the science scientific forensic evidence of the melting of this steel.
So what's the difference? I mean, what would be the difference of whether it was iron or steel? Why, I mean, what would be the significance of that?
Well, it turns out that it's not steel because its components, as determined by Stephen Jones, a physicist formerly from Brigham Young University, who analyzes it with microprobe data, the ends of the beams and the previously chunks of previously molten metal, it is iron, and it has in it the chemical evidence of thermite. Thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. So the fact that it's iron is indicative in and of itself of thermite being there, because iron is not an isolated component in construction materials. Even steel beams have alloys in them. This is not that. This is almost pure iron. But with manganese and fluorine in them, extremely unusual elements, also aluminum and other components that are associated with thermite. Manganese is from the potassium permanganate, which is an oxidizer used in thermite. Should not be in the molten metal. So there shouldn't be molten metal at all. So that's the significance. The fact that it's iron with these materials in it is evidence of thermite in and of itself.
So you're saying it's a component of the thermite? Is that what you're saying? That's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, thermite is a combination of iron oxide and aluminum powders. When finally mixed together and set off under high temperature, it produces liquid molten iron pouring out of itself, and it's used in thermite grenades to destroy the insides of tanks and to cut through steel. So it's very likely that, given that FEMA found intergranular melting with molten iron invading the grain boundaries of the steel and the ends of the beams, that thermite was the only explanation for that. See, all of this evidence is internally consistent. It all supports the hypothesis of explosive controlled demolition with thermite.
So are you saying then if there's it was pouring out, would that have been an awful lot of thermite to be there, or was that just happened to be that it was in the mix with the metals?
There was several tons of molten metal seen by the first responders, pulled up by the rigs, and this molten metal turns out to be previously molten iron, and molten iron is what.
So then you're saying there had to have been a lot of thermite there.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, the USGS infrared flights point out a week after 9/11, they read temperatures on the surface of Ground Zero at the location of the Twin Towers in Building 7, extremely hot temperatures. A week after, as hot as the hottest office fires, over 1,400 degrees Fahrenheit. So, but there was no office fires on the surface of Ground Zero after these collapses, and a week later, the heat was coming from deep down below in the rubble pile and the basements. And so what they're measuring on the surface is the radiant heat from deep below, which must have been twice the temperatures that they were reading. In other words, up to 3,000 degrees down there, which is the temperature of molten iron, molten and or molten steel. So this is a real problem for the official story, which is why they have to deny the eyewitness accounts of molten iron and the photographs and the videos, because molten metal or molten steel, they can't account for either with the official story. It's seen pouring out of the South Tower 10 minutes prior to its collapse from the point of jet plane impacts. And they're telling us, well, this is molten aluminum from the airplane. Well, molten aluminum from an airplane doesn't glow bright orange yellow in daylight conditions. It's very silvery. So we know it's not that. It's a series of lies that we're talking about. This is further given proof by the findings from official sources, USGS and others, doing toxicological studies on the dust. They find characteristic within all this dust at the World Trade Center, which landed throughout lower Manhattan in a blanket 4 and 12 inches thick. It was as if a snowstorm had just completely covered lower Manhattan, but this is finely pulverized concrete to a fine powder. Unbelievable. I mean, no collapse scenario can account for that, nor the pulverized metal filings that are found also in the dust, because we're missing 10,000 floor trusses in the World Trade Center. 220 acres of metal decking that supported each of the 110 floors. All of this is missing. I mean, this is gravitational collapse. We're looking for 110 floors stacked up at the bottom of the Twin Towers, but we don't find one. There's only a two-story pile of beams and columns.
So you're saying that was it either hauled off or was it disintegrated?
What?
The
concrete?
All those, the different structures you were talking about that were
missing.
Yeah,
all of those things were pulverized to almost a powder and metal filings. It's absolutely incredible, including people. We find that there's 700 bone fragments on top of the high-rise across the street from the Twin Towers. They're the size of a grain of rice. The pulverization is incredible, and yet there's still, and yet there's over 1,141 victims are completely unaccounted for of the 2,744 victims. Unaccounted for. They can't find a piece big enough to get any DNA from. Those bodies should have been trapped between floors and a massive stack of pancakes at the bottom of those Twin Towers. But that's not what we saw. What we saw is, as those towers are coming down, is the incredible lateral ejection of 9-ton perimeter wall units at 60 to 70 miles per hour in a horizontal vector, instant acceleration out of the side of the each tower, landing over 600 feet away.
Have you ever analyzed or anybody within this group analyzed a controlled demolition to have a comparison?
Yes. In fact, you can see that on our DVD, which highlights all of this evidence in video and photos. We have a side-by-side comparison of Building 7 coming down and a controlled demolition coming down. They come down at the same speed, in the same manner, exactly the same. Now, this in and of itself should warrant a new investigation into the possible use of explosives. But NIST acknowledges, first it says we didn't find any evidence of explosives. Later they acknowledge that they never looked for it, and they won't look for it now, despite this increasingly overwhelming evidence for the demolition of these buildings. They're in a very tight spot and are criminally negligent, in my belief, of a cover-up, a criminal conspiracy of a cover-up. We have of a crime, a very, very serious crime, because there's evidence of explosives in all of this dust that we're talking about that's laid throughout lower Manhattan. For instance, the USGS finds in all of this dust billions of small spheres of iron, microspheres, that are about the width of a human hair. So these are perfectly spherical, previously molten iron balls, spheres in all of the dust. How does molten iron get in all of the World Trade Center dust? Now, this is pretty extraordinary.
And that's
no explanation for it.
And that's indicative of the other kind of explosions that you...
It's indicative of temperatures exceeding 3,000 degrees, which
okay.
the office fires and jet fuel fires don't achieve. They don't achieve half of that temperature.
I guess what I'm saying would have been indicative of the other type of controlled demolitions.
Well, here's what sheds light on that. The chemical makeup of these spheres indicates that it is thermite also. In other words, there's traces of aluminum, manganese, and so forth, in addition to the pure iron. So that, in and of itself, is evidence of thermite. But more interesting is the findings of an international team of scientists led by Niels Harrit, who finds in all of their samples that they test small chips, a 16th of an inch long. Now, these are really curious chips because they come up to the magnet, so they're full of iron. So he tests them. They're red on one side and gray on the other, these dual-layered, interesting-looking chips. When they zoom into them with a magnifying glass, they find extremely small, tiny particles at the nanoscale, a thousand times smaller than the human hair, the diameter of a human hair. These are perfectly rhomboidal iron oxide particles and perfectly wafer-like aluminum particles. And the uniformity of these particles is incredible. And their proportion to each other is perfect, quarter to three-quarters, to make up thermite, mostly iron oxide. So this material is extremely sophisticated. It's made only in the most advanced defense contracting laboratories. And, in fact, Lawrence Livermore Lab documented this material. They're called nanocomposite explosives because it's an incendiary that becomes explosive as a result of additional organic material and the small size. The nanoscale particles allows it instantaneous reaction between the two materials.
Is that made here in the United States?
Well, it's developed at Lawrence Livermore Lab and Los Alamos Lab about 11 years ago. At least that's when they document it. We know it's not made in a cave in Afghanistan. So we're certainly looking for a real investigation into... Where did these come from? Who had access to them? Who had the means to had the access to these very highly secure buildings to place them in the buildings?
Before we forget, I also want you to go ahead and tell the audience where your site is, and you are trying to raise funds for this endeavor, and that you do have a DVD out?
Yes. We're a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and so thank you for asking. We operate only by the generosity of our donors, and so we appreciate very much the financial support of the community that is awakening to the reality that 9/11 was not as we have seen. We do a great service to and for the 9/11 truth movement, which is growing by millions every year. They use our materials liberally to help awaken the rational minds out there who are capable of, willing, first of all, to look at this evidence and capable of realizing that it is real. It is not conspiracy theory. It is not a few crazy people, but technical and building professionals who are staking their reputations, their licenses on the line to wake up our country. So our website is AE911truth.org. That stands for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, AE911truth.org. And on the website, people will find the DVD that presents all of this in a very well laid out format with different lengths, 10-minute, 30-minute, 60-minute, and then the two-hour DVD, which goes into great detail into all of these things, and the background information as well.
Do you still find that there's a lot of people out there that don't have a clue that there was questions to be asked about this event?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, a lot of people. But the receptivity is greater these days than it was 4 years ago. It's as if the collective unconscious of our country is kind of awakening to the reality, and it's about to just burst, I think, this year into mainstream media. It's going to be public conversation. It's going to create a whole lot of controversy and very angry people on every side of this issue. It's a big deal. If 9/11 was some sort of an inside operation, and all indications point to that, given very secure buildings and the unlikely access to this nanocomposite.
One of the reasons why I asked earlier about talking to some of these other people of other events that had they had these commissions that didn't, seem to produce much for the victims. One of the things that I ran across was a lot of the same people were on the same commissions, and that was why I was asking that.
Yes. Well, the investigations you might be referring to, we had four investigations. The American Society of American Society of Civil Engineers were told, volunteers from this organization were looking at the collapse. But these are not your average volunteers involved in this. They earn $10 million annually, average, in their defense contracts. So they're not in a position to be impartial whatsoever. And the FEMA, many of them merged into the FEMA report, so it wasn't an independent investigation by any means. Many of the same merged into the NIST report, or the Silverstein-Weidlinger report, and many of those merged into the NIST report. So,
what I was going to say is I didn't even realize it was on that level, but that makes sense. I was talking about Jamie Gorelick and Lee Hamilton and that being on, say, like the Oklahoma City bombing investigation, and I believe on one of the others, in fact, too. So this makes even more sense that they kind of cross over.
Yes. It's true. There was a lot of crossover from the Oklahoma City bombing investigation. Very, very damning evidence, I understand, from researchers who have really looked into that catastrophe. Have found an equally disturbing set of facts.
So, when it comes to the demolition part of this, I mean, there can't be a lot of companies out there that can come to that kind of precision. Would there be?
A lot of companies that would come to what decision?
I mean, there couldn't be many companies out there that could be that good if it was a controlled demolition, if that was it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, good point. There's about a half a dozen half a dozen qualified explosive demolition companies around, and I don't know, I have no idea who might have been involved in setting these charges. I know how they might have been set, that is to say, how would they have had access? We don't know this, but there's some speculation involved. A real investigation into, for instance, the elevator modernization going on the 9 months prior to 9/11 in the Twin Towers might reveal, it would reveal that they had access to the core columns and beams in that building with workers going in and out making all kinds of noise. The largest elevator modernization in history, in fact, was going on there. So there's certainly access to those core columns and beams. Ace Elevator had this contract, and they were they scattered at the 85 employees of this company scattered at the first jet plane impact. They didn't stick around to help the firefighters rescue the victims, and they are experts in these vehicles for delivery. It was really quite a scandal. It was documented by USA Today. It's very disturbing.
Is there any one thing that stands out the most disturbing or most anomaly that you can't reconcile in any way?
Well, it's why would in what is supposed to be a gravitational collapse of the Twin Towers? Why do we have 118 first responders recorded orally talking about sounds of explosions, hearing, feeling explosions, shaking their bones? They said wrapping like a belt all the way around the building, all these explosions, seeing flashes of light, flashes of light on the 10th and 15th floor, on various floors. At the point of jet plane impacts, and then the building coming down. 118 of them reporting this, and yet not one of those reports ends up in the 9/11 Commission report, the FEMA report, the NIST report. This was all held and sequestered by Mayor Giuliani's office until the New York Court State of Appeals overturns the city of New York and requires them to release this information and to the New York Times, who transcribes it, and there's very damning information in there about all of these explosions that were cleaned out of the 9/11 Commission report. Explosions not only up top but down in the basements that weren't even discussed. And in the lobbies, elevators blown out in a huge amount of damage, people dying. And these are elevators that are not even associated with the one elevator shaft that descends from the top floors down to the bottom. So we know it's not jet fuel making its way down there, causing that explosion, which is what we've been told. Basements exploding. People down in the basements are being lifted up off their feet from explosions down below. None of these make it in, even though, in this case, Willie Rodriguez, janitor in the Twin Towers, his testimony is removed from the 9/11 Commission report. There's no excuse for these kinds of things.
What has compelled you to continue to carry out getting this message out? I mean, there has to be. I mean, you've devoted a lot of your life, and like you were saying, a lot of people's licenses in that sort. What is it that's making you do this?
Well, I'm sure you would do the same thing. I'm sure my boss would do the same thing. I had the previous architecture firm that I worked for. A lot of people are not doing the same thing, I have to acknowledge. I don't know why. If we've been lied to on a colossal scale by members of our government, the media, congressional people, the administration, then there's something really, really wrong in the state of Denmark, rotten. And we can't just sit by and pretend that somebody else is going to take care of it. I mean, who's going to take care of it? There were no architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth when I started waking up to this 4 years ago, but there were scholars for 9/11 Truth. There was Marines for 9/11 Truth. There was pilots for 9/11 Truth. It was obvious what I had to do, and I got the first 14. Now we have almost 1,200. We'll have 2,000, we believe, by September 11th, whereupon we will have a press conference in Washington, D.C., and make quite a stink wherever we can, bringing DVDs and petitions to every member of Congress personally, handing it to them. We have to do something, because what happened, I mean, this is not ancient history, 9/11. It's not even history. It's current affairs. The two wars started as a result of 9/11. We've invaded two countries. We are still occupying two countries. We are still killing people over there. Our soldiers are being killed. This is real. If the foundation of these wars is crumbling on a pack of lies that we were sold, then we must get we must rectify the situation. It's incumbent upon every American citizen to wake up and demand a real investigation of all of the events of 9/11, not just these three skyscrapers, but all of the other anomalies associated with it, including put options where millions were made betting that the airliners involved in the affected by the hijackings and would go down in value, you know, the next day on 9/11. NORAD was standing down basically while these planes, hijacked planes, were flying unmolested in the skies for an hour and a half. That the drills they had took the jets north, south, everywhere but where they needed to be.
And wasn't Cheney in charge of that?
Yeah, very unusual sets of policy decisions put in place before 9/11 that changed everything, the way the Vice President and NORAD were interacting, including Rumsfeld. All of them, many of them, top government officials, were missing in action that day. And there's just so many very, very suspicious sets of circumstances that it just doesn't add up. I encourage everyone to read David Ray Griffin, who writes The New Pearl Harbor Revisited, extraordinary work detailing many of these anomalies.
Was it ever determined what happened to the street camera surveillance tapes that were collected?
You're referring to the Pentagon?
Well, not only the Pentagon, but I understand that they were also there in New York City, and they collected many of the videos that were...
Oh, yeah, I didn't even know that. I didn't know that. But there's so much confiscation of videotapes that would show the American people what really, for instance, at the Pentagon, what did or didn't hit it.
Okay, I've got Richard Gage, AIA, back with us. And something. There we go. And you're there, Richard?
Yes.
Okay, and you were starting to talk a little bit about the cameras there at the Pentagon, and then it kind of disconnected.
Yes, I don't know what happened, sorry. These cameras were confiscated within 10 minutes at the hotel across the street and the Citgo gas station from the Pentagon, and they would have shown what did or didn't hit the Pentagon, but the Pentagon won't release them, or the FBI, who confiscated them, won't release them. the Pentagon's surrounded by cameras all over the place, but they won't release that either. So it's obvious, obviously a cover-up.
So have you done any investigation with the architects and engineers on the Pentagon?
No, I certainly haven't. I've focused on the three skyscrapers that have obvious evidence of explosive-controlled demolition. Pentagon is quite controversial, even within the 9/11 truth movement, given the broad array of data and misinformation that has been strewn about.
Mm-hmm. So, do you envision that this movement among just the architects and engineers alone will continue to grow exponentially? Or do you think you pretty much got a lot of the architects and engineers?
No. We'll have hundreds of thousands of architects and engineers agreeing with us. It's inevitable. It's just a matter of getting them in front of the information. There's only, you know, about 1% of any crowd where an architect or engineer, maybe 0.5% of a crowd, where we'll get an architect or engineer continuing to hold on to their belief in the official story. The evidence is overwhelming, and it does speak for itself. So we're very fortunate that way. We have an easy sell once we get people sitting in front of the information. It's very difficult for us to, any of us, to consider the possibility that this was an inside job. The conspiracy is a vast conspiracy. We're talking about almost, you know, evil. Murdering 3,000 of our own citizens in order to go to war. Who could have pulled this off? How could they have gotten away with it? We would have heard about it by now. It seems inconceivable. And yet the scientific forensic evidence is there, and it's irrefutable. So these are very difficult sets of realities for the mind to deal with in juxtaposition. And it's easier, you know, it's easier not to look at it. So that's the challenge that we have, is getting people to sit down and look at it. We have to do a lot of work to fill a theater or library room in any given venue. But we've done it, and we have 100 to 600 people in these venues, and there's been over 150 of them so far, and we're getting booked up. We're going to Canada next weekend, and we have lots of travel. We're going, in fact, to South Africa in the last weekend in September, and China. We'll be in China on their equivalent of their 60 Minutes program on October 8th. So we'll be presenting the evidence to 1.1 billion Chinese people, which is...
Well, we've got him back for the last few minutes of the program, Richard Gage, AIA. And if there's any closing comments that you'd like to give, Richard, it seems like... interesting cutoffs here taking place. So,
yeah.
This doesn't happen often either, so.
Oh, okay. Well, I would encourage all of your listeners to go to the website and get informed. We have to take personal responsibility for this information once we become aware of it. You can't sit on it. Your conscience will eat at you, and you don't want that. You want to be properly informed now that you've been made aware. So look at all sides of this issue. Check out all these facts. You'll find that they turn out to be true, unfortunately. Then you're sitting with a huge problem. You have to act. and the action is will be guided by your conscience. Many people do many different things in response to this information. It provokes a deep awakening. It's really, it affects one's whole life. It certainly can, because people get outraged and they want to do something. So what you can do is send the AE911truth.org link to every architect and engineer that you can find and everyone else that you know. Send the purchase these cards. You know, they're very inexpensive. That give the evidence. So the brochures we sell at cost, and you can, or you can download them and print your own and hand them out like candy everywhere you go. This is a grassroots movement. It's growing by millions every year, and so that's by word of mouth, by dripping on people who at first think you're crazy, and then they start to come around. That's just the way it works. Usually, it takes time. So it's a very dedicated, selfless effort of saving our country. I mean, that's really what we're about. We're saving our country. There's nothing less than that, because we're going to have the next 9/11, and we've been promised that it's going to be far worse than the last. Let's not allow that to happen.
And that, you know, and that's one thing that I really have noticed, that the public, those who have been paying attention, are definitely paying attention to any of these speeches and things and events that take place, and making sure that, you know, the truth is coming out of them. Correct? Do you see that on any of the other, even the ones that may not be an inside job or whatever, but you're starting to see the public start really asking questions early on and making the authorities come forward with better information.
Yeah, and they're blowing it. I mean, for instance, the underwear bomber turns out to have been chaperoned onto the plane by a mysterious authoritative government agent. It's just fascinating what happens, how these things self-expose after a while. So I think you're right. People are asking harder questions, waking up.
Right, and I want to again thank you for being gracious and coming on our program again and enlightening our audiences to your further work with your group, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And again, I hope the public will go to your site and get your DVD and help support this group and their great efforts.
Thank you, Melody. I really appreciate it. It was nice being here with you and Katie.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Good night.
Okay, I'll see you. Bye-bye.
Bye.